Good evening and welcome to Box Office Battle Season 2. We're doing the worst Marvel movies ever made. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're at our last battle of the first round. It is Fantastic Four versus Kraven the Hunter in Box Office Battles.
Hi, I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
Hi, I'm Greg and I'm a nerd.
Aren't you?
I have never seen anything like this.
The worst part has been watching the actual watching of the movie.
Some of these were pretty terrible.
And we are back. It's Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. And we are here to close out the first round of our worst Marvel movies in existence. Took a couple of weeks off, which is our right, damn it.
Yeah, right. If you have a problem with it, then you can send it to our email address, which is get the fuck over it. No, sorry, it's boxofficebattles@gmail.com.
That is
but also get the fuck over it.
It is what it is. Sometimes things happen, life happens, and you know, we're here. We are doing pretty well on the streams right now. We could be doing better, so make sure if you love this podcast, you tell a friend and get them. We just crossed the 1,200 stream mark, which is not bad for an upstart little podcast. So that's how many people have listened to at least.
With a podcast, mind you, with no budget.
Right.
No marketing.
Right.
No talent.
Right.
Nothing worthwhile to offer anybody in your whole goddamn stupid life.
Exactly.
And so that 1,200 people would subject themselves to that is kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice to see. I mean, we get them from all over the country. There's a lot of people in Canada that listen to the podcast, which is interesting. I'm not sure all of it is data mining. So hopefully it's really just listening to the show. You know what our most what our most popular episode is by a big margin, almost 200 streams of one particular episode. And I think it's because it's sports related.
Well, then it's got to be, what is it, the final four of the sports thing?
You would think so. It's Major League versus Kingpin.
I'm trying to think of what someone could have accidentally typed into Google to come across our thinking. Like when I Googled like two giant sweaty bears fighting one another. And then all of a sudden it was,
yeah,
hot, certainly hot, but not exactly two giant bears. Well, yes, yeah, it was exactly. But anyway, they had to have found us somehow. And maybe they're just trying to train AI or something with our content.
Yeah,
people do that now.
It could be. I know that it's been going good. So we want to thank everybody for tuning in, but make sure you're listening to us on one of the providers, whether that's Apple Podcast or Spotify, Amazon Music, and Pandora. There's many others out there, so make sure that you're subscribing. Hey, subscribe to them all, and give us a listen and tell your friends. So like Eric said, you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com just to give us your thoughts and suggestions, or tell us to go to hell. It doesn't matter. And if you want to watch the live streams like you're doing right now, whether that's on Facebook Live, you can also watch it on at Box Office Battle Podcast, and on Twitch at YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast, and Twitch is Box Office Battle Pods. Those are the three places that we do the live stream when we are live. You subscribe on those, you'll get notified when we go live. And the good part about being live is that you can comment, and we will throw your comments up on the screen. Let's see, we've got one already. It's from our regular contributor, Mike Leblanovitz, or Mike Florida, as his handle is known. And he says, hi, everybody. See, that's how easy it is. You watch the live stream, we throw up your comments.
You yell. Hi, everybody, body, into this big, empty cavern.
Yes.
And you're the only person there. And then you start to realize how truly alone you really are.
But at Box Office Battles, you're seen and you are heard.
So hey, anyway. Vinny Cataldo, who was 9 when I was on Jarrett Goes to the Movies podcast.
Yeah.
And now he has grandchildren.
It's crazy.
So it's the way that
we've grown up. Hello, Vinny. Hello, Vinny.
The way we've grown up. Before we get into this, can we talk about the problem that I have with your bullying?
Oh, you're talking about the text I sent you over the weekend.
Yes.
Yes. Now,
I would like everybody to know that on Saturday,
yes,
I got a text from Greg. Now, there are pictures, but I don't want to talk about that right now. It just says, wish you were here.
Yes.
And a smiley face. Well, one of those laughing, like, I'm crying, like, this is funny. Now, let's try to think it might be where I would wish that I was there. Maybe he was at a guitar store and saw some vintage acoustic guitars. I would love to be somewhere like that. I'm a giant soccer fan. I have supported an English Premier League team called Everton for a decade and a half. And I am very, very, very much into soccer. My boy plays soccer year round. So maybe Greg was at a World Cup watch party or something.
And possibly.
I wish you were here, Eric, because this is something you would enjoy. No, Greg, where were you when you sent me a text that said, wish you were here?
I was actually at a Beetlejuice the Musical live showing here in Dayton, Ohio.
God, what? Okay. All right.
And so, all I could think about was Eric and your love of Beetlejuice.
I mean, I'm sure there is some not insignificant, well, everything's insignificant, Greg, in the grand scheme of things, but some not insignificant number of people who, when they hear Beetlejuice, think of me because
right.
I think that movie is a piece of stupid shit. So what I'm trying to figure out is we take the world's stupidest piece of shit movie, we combine it with local theater.
This was a Broadway touring production.
So you've got the guy who fixed your faucet last week playing the role of, you know, John Q. Dickhead or whatever. And I mean, okay, well, you want to give us a quick review of the Dayton Live, Broadway's dearly beloved musical comes to Dayton, Beetlejuice, the musical, the musical, the musical, live June 23rd through June 28th. Get your tickets at the Schuster Center.
Yeah, it just wrapped up. We do the theater here. My wife and I, when we lived in England, we went to West End, you know, show. And so when we got here, and we noticed that they had, like, the touring company, they do, like, 6 shows a year. So we just signed up for, like, the season tickets, and we go no matter what it is. Because it's a nice day out. We go Saturday afternoons. They make curated drinks, which are really awesome for the show. So I get a nice cocktail.
Do you have Vivaldi's Spring from the Four Seasons able to play for as a bed while you're describing your...
No, but I have Oh, What a Night by Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. Anyway, but you know, so we go all the time, and this year we've seen some pretty decent shows. The last one we saw before this was Mrs. Doubtfire, and surprisingly enough, that was a lot of fun to watch on stage. The guy who played Mrs. Doubtfire did a really, really, really good job. So we had high hopes that Beetlejuice would capture some of the movie. Interestingly enough, it's very different from the film. I don't think you would like this version.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Go on.
This version anyway. They changed the story around quite a bit. Instead of her parents moving Lydia to the country, her mom dies and her dad is seeing a new woman and they move out in the country. So it becomes this whole thing about Lydia's obsession with death because of her mom. And wanting to go into the afterworld to find her mom. So they add little nuance.
I can relate to Lydia because I often have found myself contemplating death because of my mother. So
that happens.
Kind of the same. Anyway,
it was what you would expect. You know, we know that some of these are going to be cheesy Broadway musicals, but we like going for the environment just to have a good time. It was packed. People were dressed up like Beetlejuice, so that was cool. I got my cocktail and just enjoyed it. The second half of the show had a lot of like computer graphic effects and stuff like that. No. But so it was okay. It wasn't as good as Mrs. Doubtfire. It wasn't our favorite that we saw this year, but we had a good time. So you wouldn't have liked it. I can guarantee you that.
Well, I mean, yeah, way to really go out there on a limb.
Now, here's the thing, though. You know, speaking of things that you like or don't like, we're doing the worst Marvel movies. This is the last of the first round, and then next time we meet will be the final four, and we'll decide which the worst movie is. And also this past weekend, we saw a movie that's recently come out that is a superhero movie. And it's all of a sudden started this kind of discord about it through the social media and different avenues out there. And it's crazy to me what's going on with this movie. And that's Supergirl. And before we get into the garbage Marvel movies that we've been covering, I just want to address the elephant in the room. Do you need a break? Do you need to say goodnight to your kids there?
No, I'm saying hold on, because you're saying these terrible movies, but let's let's not be presumptuous.
Well, you know, they've not all been terrible. Ghost Rider we enjoyed. But some of them are really are
Madam Web was fucking rad.
Yeah, I know you love Madam Web. We've made that perfectly clear. But the wife and I went and seen the new Supergirl from DC Studios, and I had heard some of the negative stuff going into the film. I didn't care. I liked the Superman that came out last year, and she does a cameo in it. So we were already kind of interested, and we'd already planned, you know, a month ago to go see this film. And then all of a sudden we started seeing all these negative reviews. The movie hadn't even come out yet. And you got these social media freaks that are doing all this stuff. And what was crazy was the movie ended and we had a great time. It wasn't an Oscar worthy film. It's not meant to be, but it was action packed. It had a lot of humor in it. It was entertaining for what it was. You know, the main villain was kind of weak, but who cares? It was, as a comic book film, I would put it kind of right in the middle of most of the ones that I've seen. You know, not the best, not definitely not the worst, far from the worst. Compared to the 1980s Supergirl with Helen Slater and Faye Dunaway, it was definitely not that level of bad. So we got out, and it was funny because my wife went to the restroom before we left, and I'm standing there with some fellow moviegoers, and they all had the same kind of, we're all standing there talking, and they just go, "What did you think of Supergirl?" And I'm like, I enjoyed it. It was fun. And people are like, "Yeah, I heard this movie sucked. I heard that she's horrible, blah, 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 blah." And we all just went, "Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from." And so then after I saw it, I started looking up some of these reviews. And what is really interesting to me is how most of the negative reviews about this film, most, not all, don't sound like they even saw the film. They've seen a clip. They've seen a trailer. Because no one talks about, they'll go, I saw one guy said, "Oh, the plot is slow. Nothing happens." Then I saw another guy goes, "Oh, there's too much happening. It's too fast." And then, but most of them will go, the script is really bad because it's a first-time screenwriter. But they won't say what is wrong with the script. They talk about Millie Alcock not looking the part or whatever. She's phenomenal in the film. She's really good. A lot of people agree on that. So it's just this thing that we have to stop doing. If a movie's bad, a movie's bad. And the ones that we've been covering in the worst Marvel movies, these are movies that have been made with no love really in them. They're made strictly by these studios, in my opinion, to try to make a buck, which all films are. But some of these superhero films are made by people who genuinely love the comics and want to put something out that's worthy. And I think there was some genuine care put into the Supergirl film. And I think that what they're doing to it right now is a load of bullshit, because people should determine whether they like it for themselves or not, and not listen to a bunch of assholes in their basement, like I am sitting in my basement right now.
Like, yeah, speaking of.
Don't listen to assholes in your basement.
No, listen to this guys, asshole in this basement.
But guys that haven't seen the film and just don't want to hate on it. And the last thing I'll say about it, and a lot of this stems from this anti-woke movement, and I can understand part of that. I don't like things that are preachy and shoved down my throat. But it's like we're labeling Well, okay. I mean, like a few things shoved down my throat. Asshole.
Not so fast.
I stand corrected. But, and so I get it with the people that are on that woke thing. I get it. But we can't sit there with a rubber stamp and just stamp something woke and then say, stay away from it. This movie is far from woke. They're basing that on the fact that this poor girl was doing a press tour and someone from a gay magazine asked about Supergirl's gender orientation. Right then and there, she's in a no-win situation. If she says that Supergirl is straight, then the gay people will, that word backlash will show up everywhere. Supergirl's not one of us, you know, that kind of thing. If she says that she's maybe gay or whatever, then the anti-woke mob is going to stamp it woke, and then nobody will go see it. What she ended up saying was something along the lines of, she has a lot of friends in the gay community, and because this movie doesn't focus on any male character or male love interest, and it focuses on her as a woman, that she finds that refreshing, and it doesn't really delve into her sexual orientation. But then she says, maybe she's bi, who knows? And then she winks. A very diplomatic answer that I feel in that situation, when you're put in that situation by a reporter. She kind of played both sides like a politician would. Yet it's being twisted like she said something demonic. And it's so ridiculous. It's disgusting. And so before we got into the show tonight, I really just annoyed me that people think that we can't watch a movie on its own merit and make up our own minds, that you have to be intimidated. You say anything positive about this movie on social media, these freaking social media bullies will come after you. So I don't do shit, but I've watched other people defend this movie and get ripped to shreds for it, being called a cuck or whatever they want to call people for liking this movie. This movie is no agenda whatsoever. There is the bad guys, they steal women to make them their brides and kind of slave them. But never once does anybody get preachy about it.
Kind of like a Jew would.
Oh, my God.
Is that what you mean?
No, that's not what I mean.
But that's anyway. What you said. I was just trying to clarify.
That is not what I said.
Social media is built around sowing discord.
Mm-hmm.
It gave loud voices to all of the wrong people.
Yeah.
And the algorithm is built around you being angry, because anger is a much stronger emotion than feeling like genuinely, maybe not happy. Feeling happy is very strong, but
right.
Just feeling content to scroll through, you know, and go, you know, I'm really glad I did that, is not near as powerful as scrolling through and going, what the hell? There's someone out there who disagrees with me about something.
Yeah.
And so they're going to do that. And that's not my opinion. That's just how it is. They know that. They need your engagement. Listen, if you are using something for free, and that is X, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, if what you are using is free, you are the product. And you need to be on there longer for advertising, for, you know, any number of things. And so they will find a way to do that. The best way to do that is to show you things that make you uncomfortable. What it also did, and I made a joke, you know, that's what Jews do. Please, nobody write in. Or write in. I don't care. We could use the mail. We check the mailbox every day, and there's nothing in there. A spider. There's one spider in the very back. But what the internet did was also give some sort of like plausible reasonability to things that are completely unreasonable. And what I mean by that is 50 years ago, if you were a person who believed that the Holocaust was fake, it was made up. There's an agenda behind why we were all taught it was real, but it wasn't. If that's what you believed, you couldn't, it would be very difficult for you to just walk out your front door and find somebody else who shared that belief. You wouldn't know how to bring it up because most people are going to go, no, dude, like it's pretty well documented.
Right.
You wouldn't know how to bring it up. You wouldn't know who. You wouldn't find, even if you did bring it up to the first 1,000 people you met when you walked out your door, not one person's going to agree with you. You go forward in time to where we've got, you know, everyone's got access to the internet. And so it doesn't take very long to type in something, some weird fucking bullshit that you believe, type it in and go, there are people just like me out there. And now you've got a community of people where before you could not establish a community like that, or it would be, you know, typewriter newsletters that got mailed out to 7 people across the world. And it just, you know, it that's what it did. I work for the internet. I work for a company that makes technology that makes the internet work. And, you know, on one hand, I'm gainfully employed because the internet exists. On the other hand, I mean, it is one of the worst things that has ever been released upon us. And, you know, I honestly start to feel bad for people who, I don't know, need to feel special, want to feel special, want to feel like they belong or have this need to be included. Yeah. And the first thing that you can find is a community of other like-minded dipshits. And you just go, well, these people will like me as long as I believe this stupid fucking thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so
it's true.
I mean, you shouldn't be surprised. And I know that it is frustrating, but like I quit Facebook many years ago. Got back on briefly when I joined Jarrett Goes to the Movies. They're like, it'd be nice for you to have a presence. And I think within a month I was like, I'm not doing that. So if that's a requirement, I'm out.
Yeah.
I would challenge anyone to think back to the last 4 or 5 times you've been scrolling through your preferred social media for however long it was. And you closed the app and you thought to yourself, my life is better because I just did that.
Right. Yeah. And good point.
I think very rarely are you going to find yourself going, I'm really glad I did that. I'm really happy that I spent that time that I did that. Off my soapbox and back onto yours. Thank you for defending Gal Gadot
and Supergirl. Millie Alcock and Supergirl. And again, I want to say to those that I did promote the show and told them all to tune in, and I would mention our conversation. So if any of those people tuned in, thank you for the conversation. These were people that we weren't on social media. We were in the lobby of the theater going, why did people say this movie's bad? And it's makes no sense. We had a really good time. It wasn't the greatest superhero movie, but it didn't have to be, but it doesn't deserve what it's getting. So all I would say is what I've taken to doing is when I see these comments, I never respond to them. I just look at who the profile picture of the person that's putting them out there. And it's nobody in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases, it's nobody that I probably would associate with outside of in my personal life, just based on I can tell by their profile pic that they're an asshole. So I just move on to the next thing, but it's still annoying that they can have wield this kind of power. And you're right. You say really good things about the power of the internet. It has so many things that it can do good, but yet people use it to be toxic. And I think we need to really flex how good we can be and have a really good community and start supporting things. If something's bad, there are things out there that push an agenda and that you can complain about, but we've got to be careful of stamping everything. Otherwise, we won't have any films to watch that are of any quality because studios are going to stop funding them. And it's not going to go back to doing films like they were in the 60s and 50s. John Wayne's not coming back from the dead. As much as I love him, he's not coming back to make those films. These are what we have. So if you don't like a particular type of film, go to film school, write a fucking screenplay, and do it yourself instead of getting on Facebook. Stop wasting your time. Anyway, now, with all that being said, we're going to sit
down,
there
boy,
and rip apart some shitty movies. Now, the ones that we have been discussing, like I said before, are consensusly these are bad films. These are movies that were made, and when you look at all of them, one of the things that they all have in common are that the studio involvement was extremely heavy, and the studio really wanted money. They wanted to capitalize on the name of the product rather than focus on making a good film. And I think tonight we have a couple that perfectly fit that. Neither one of these did well at the box office. They both lost money. They both have a problem with generating fans. And the other ones, one of them's already been remade. And that is our matchup, our last matchup, the number two seed, Josh Trank's 2015 Fantastic Four versus what came out just recently, I believe last year, a number seven seed, Kraven the Hunter, made by Sony Pictures for their Marvel Spider-Verse universe. So,
like Kraven this dick.
I saw that you made your screen name.
Which one of these do we have to start with?
We are going to start with Kraven this dick is what we're going to start with.
Okay, this movie is fucking awesome, you guys. Listen.
Yeah.
All right. Fake Russian accents aside, and listen, I don't even have anything wrong with that. It's a fun accent to do. You don't have to do it well. You only have to do it like kind of partly okay for people to know you're doing a Russian, like from Rocky and Bullwinkle. Yeah, like we love that knit. You know, or a lot of people like, I must break you. Yeah. Whatever, you know, even Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Yeah, good call.
So, yeah, the movie's packed full of stupid Soviet relic accents, but this movie is, first of all, the best of the eight that we have watched so far.
That's your opinion.
Maybe Ghost Rider because it was fun.
Yeah.
But Kraven, like if you had to sit down and go, we got to send one of these to like the Library of Congress. Such a stupid, like everything. Anyway, so we got to send one of them to Library of Congress. This movie. All right, Greg, here's a style of movie that I really like. Liam Neeson in Taken.
Yeah.
And Taken 2.
Yep.
Matt Damon in The Bourne Supremacy Ultimatum and whatever the other one was.
Yep. Those are good.
And I'm sure there's plenty out there where like the character that we're supposed to care about is badass. Mm. Like can do it all, sees it all happening before it happens, has a certain specific set of skills and like I'm getting chills, dude. Like, oh, it's because you put this picture up and this guy's got his shirt off. Okay.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I did that for you.
Yeah, you were trying to derail me. It's not going to work. I mean, kind of. My God, look at him. That's a 10-pack that he's got.
Pretty much.
And two packs on the side that I didn't even know you could have. I mean, yes, I did. If you've ever seen a shirtless, then you know. But, okay. So,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, we've had this come up a couple of times where all these movies have corny elements to them.
Right.
I challenge you to find a movie that is built around superhero, like that's what the movie is, that isn't corny. Even the best of them have some corny element to them because that's what makes them comic booky and kind of over the top and,
right.
and bigger than life and you know these origin stories. So if you've not seen Kraven, and God, I mean, I hate to do this because we're gonna have to spoil a perfectly good film that didn't come out that long ago.
No, last year, I believe.
But there is no difference than him getting attacked by a lion and having a magical potion given to him that revives him, but also has the unintended side effect of combining his DNA and RNA with lion and whatever. That's no more stupid than literally any other how did I get my power?
Right.
Superhero story. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any problem with that. I mean, he's not like the description said anti-hero. I don't see him as an anti-hero. The guy's going after. It reminded me of Dexter. He's got a list of people he's going after. They're bad guys. He's
right.
going after. He's going to check off his list one after one. We liked Dexter, that TV show, because it kind of fit our like retaliation agenda, you know, or revenge porn or whatever fetish. And so parts of it are dumb. I almost can find parts of every movie that are dumb, but like I was thoroughly entertained. I liked the character. I thought it was fairly, as far as these eight movies went, I thought it was fairly interesting. I thought they at the very least tried to have some idea of a beginning, middle, and end, where a lot of these movies we watched had all beginning, no middle, and just a little bit of end.
Right.
We've been all over the place with whatever movie it was where I paused it and it was 45 minutes in and I was just like, do something then. And I didn't have that with this. So like, you can tell me, you know more. I know that you will know more about the movie than I know. I watched it one time.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't have a problem with this. I was entertained. I would honestly, unironically, because Madam Web, I think we're getting a little tongue in cheek, as over the top as my love or my hate for Beetlejuice is.
Yeah.
As is my love for Madam Web. I genuinely don't have a problem with this movie at all. I would watch this movie again today.
Well, it's funny you say that, because out of the eight, you mentioned that this is probably the best, if not Ghost Rider. And Ghost Rider in a certain way, in that cheesy, bad movie, it's good way that Ghost Rider is. But you're looking at Madam Web, X-Men, Dark Phoenix, Elektra, Ghost Rider, Fantastic Four, we're getting ready to talk about Howard the Duck and Morbius. So yeah, I would agree with you. And there are a lot of people who really do like this movie. It came out actually in 2024. And I think there's a lot of reasons why. So if I were going to say why I think the movie succeeds, I think one big reason is Aaron Taylor Johnson, who plays the main character. He's been in several movies. He was the lead in Kick-Ass. He was also Quicksilver in the Avengers. People genuinely like this guy as an actor. He's been rumored to maybe be the next James Bond. He is British in real life. He's a fantastic action actor who puts a lot into the roles. If you've never seen the movie Bullet Train with Brad Pitt, he was phenomenal in that. A massive role, a very likable character. And it was that role that got him this, where they basically had a kind of a short list of actors that they wanted to do this movie. And he went to the top of the list after Bullet Train. So one of the main reasons I think that is why people like it. I also think it's because it's almost a take on Wolverine from the X-Men, where they kind of said, okay, we're going to build this character up. Let's make him a little bit like Wolverine so that he appeals that wild man. He is a hunter and he's from the jungle. And so they give him where he used those lion's teeth as kind of claws, like the schnickety schnick that Wolverine does. So that's appealing. I know people that really get into this movie, and I don't have a problem. Again, if you like any of these films, I'm not going to say that there's a problem with you. I think that you like what you like, and that's the opinion that we kind of carry here. I personally dislike most of the films on this list for certain reasons. And this one, I don't really dislike as many as the others, so that's true. I will say this. The things that I don't like about it is the fact that Sony is basically was just trying to milk that, hey, we've got all of these superheroes that we need to milk and try to get the money out of. They're in the Spider-Verse, or we're going to lose the rights to them. So they started cranking out Morbius and Madam Web, and this was in the list. And all of those movies, basically, they want the same script. It has a very similar script to those films where it's, let's flash back to when he's young. Let's look at the trauma, look at all the things that, you know, that he's got going on. And I think that it becomes almost a generic, you know, money grab is what they want. It becomes more than that too, but I think that's my initial thing. Plus, Kraven in the comic books is not a, he's not a hero. He was introduced into Spider-Man, and he was a hunter that had hunted all the big game all over the world and decided that he wanted to hunt the biggest game. So he ended up getting these powers, and through the witch Calypso, who was a witch from Haiti, so they kind of changed that around, and he ends up chasing down and trying to take on Spider-Man, and he become a main Spider-Man villain. He never became really good in the comics, so this is kind of a forced origin story where we're going to take this comic book character who's always a villain, and we're going to make him into, a hero.
Here's where I think we really start to get into the like fundamental difference or maybe where the source of a bunch of angst is in this, is that it's kind of two part. The first is, if you decide that you want to make a movie like this and you're going to spend $130 million, you've got a couple of choices. You can really stay true to your source material and appeal to the sweaty comic book nerd who says, I'm really happy that what I saw in the comics 30 years ago is what I'm seeing on screen 30 years later. But that's a small subset of people compared to the general movie-going public who have never heard of Kraven the Hunter, do not know that it is in any way associated with Spider-Man. I did not know that until you just said that.
Right.
Because there's nothing in this movie, as far as I know. I mean, a comic book person may be able to connect the dots, but I didn't see anything that kind of hit me in the face that this was based in or around Spider-Man. And so the general movie going public doesn't really give a shit what the comic book said 30 years ago. We care about being entertained, and maybe it's a gateway into comics for some people who see these movies and go, you know, I mean, I never was really into comic books, but maybe I could go back in time. We do that with music. When I started playing guitar, I was listening to Eric Clapton because that Unplugged album had come out, and started working backwards from there and listening to the guy. First of all, listening to older Clapton stuff, never mind that he's a shithead now, but then also listening to the people he was influenced by, Muddy Waters and Robert Johnson, and kind of going back like that. So you could do this if you're just like me, random guy who doesn't know anything about comics. I think that's the big deal. You at some point, you got to choose who your audience is. And it wouldn't be any different than if you and I watched a documentary about something I know something about, jerking off, or Everton Football Club, right?
Right, right.
You could watch that and come back and go, you know, I thought that was really interesting. I love the part where I didn't know Liverpool and Everton, you know, kind of used to be the same basic soccer team. I could watch that and be like, none of that is right. That's not how it happened. And they left out Duncan Ferguson, and they left out, you know, we would have dissimilar experiences with the same movie because of our background. The problem is that in the same example I just made, the number of Everton supporters who would watch that movie and pick it apart would be far fewer than the number of kind of general movie or general soccer fans who would watch it and be entertained. And I don't know how you bridge that for people. I just think it's just a diametrically opposed like starting point for getting into the movie. And so, like you said, you know, you show the picture and Craven wasn't even, he wasn't even a good guy. He was this hunter and he did this and he did that. And I'm just going, well, I really liked the movie except for the Russian accents, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, does that make sense? Am I way off or?
No, not at all. And this is a movie that I think that Sony tried harder to make this one work than they did Madam Web and Morbius, who failed miserably. People started to catch on that, hey, this isn't really the Marvel Universe. This is Sony's attempt to use these D-listers, really, to try to make movies because they're associated with Spider-Man. But this one, I think they genuinely tried to make a more entertaining film. They did make an R-rated film. And I think they mainly did that because Deadpool had been successful as an R-rated film based on violence. So they wanted to make the Kraven the Hunter be more brutal. They hired a really good actor. They hired Russell Crowe to come in and play his father, Nikolai, who is like this kingpin of crime. He's also a hunter. So the things that I like is that I love Russell Crowe in the role. It's nice seeing him in something, especially since he had never done like a comic book film. I like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I like some of the things they do with some of the other characters. The guy who plays the Rhino is another Spider-Man villain, and they treat that character with a little bit more respect. It's very interesting that he kind of does the same thing in the comics where he was trying to get super strength and he ends up getting this suit bonded to him that he can never remove. In this, they kind of tease it. They tease it and tease it until he finally goes full Rhino. Never go full Rhino. And he's very interesting. The story with his brother's kind of interesting. You kind of saw, like with Morbius, that, okay, his brother's going to turn bad. And so there's a lot that I liked. I liked some of the action sequences. Some of the things I disliked, I didn't like the CGI as well. I thought that the animals looked kind of goofy, but did. That's what it is. You can't, these days you can't use real, I'll give them a pass, but I've seen better animal CGI. Hell, the Lion King is better. the remake that they did was better. The wildebeest and everything like that, that's a little bit meh. I thought that there was some cliches in the storyline with the brother and the dad that's the overbearing, you killed my wife, you know, in childbirth and whatever. The whole dad-son trauma, we've seen that. We've seen that in films. But that's a catalyst for the film. I think the main thing that I think that could have saved this movie and maybe even got word-of-mouth buzz, because it did not do well at the box office, and I think part of the reason is that people had seen Madam Web and Morbius and went, no, you're not getting us again. We're not even going. But people who have since seen this on streaming have said they've enjoyed it. But I think one of the things is they try to do too much. And I think that it gets bogged down in as many villains as they have in the film, because there is Nikolai Russell Crowe, eventually his brother, but that's kind of toward the end, spoiler alert. Then you've got the foreigner who gets hired as a henchman. You've got this other henchman guy. You've got the Rhino. And it's like, all right, pick a lane, because
I could have done without the mystic, takes off his glasses, and instantly you're hypnotized guy.
Totally out of place.
And it really, and honestly, okay, maybe it's too much. I'd have been okay with too much if at the end it resulted in anything. But I mean, he just died. He just quickly died. But listen, if we got to throw the baby out with the bathwater for every movie that had kind of a cliche father son weirdness, if we have to throw out every movie that had bad CGI, and luckily this movie isn't super CGI forward. I mean, for a movie that's about a guy who became part lion, there's just a few of those. And then at the very end, you know, I mean, yeah, but at that point, it just feels like nits that you could pick on any movie. I mean, I could watch fucking Good Will Hunting and be like, well, I didn't like Minnie Driver's accent. It was, and I don't in that movie. It's fucking weird. And that's one of my favorite movies, but like, okay. And yeah, the foreigner or whatever is his fucking
Yeah, that's
name
what you
was.
Were talking about. He just suddenly dies.
And he's invincible. Everybody he comes across the whole time is taken by his charms and powerless against him until he's standing in the middle of the forest and takes an arrow to the eyeball. Right. And it was just like, oh, that was it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I get that, but my God, if that's the worst I got to deal with for a film like this.
So the thing, the thing with me is, it's kind of like with Morbius, is that instead of just, and again, I am nitpicking because the film could have been, this had the makings of a really great superhero film that could have done well and maybe had, future sequels. And unfortunately, I think that just some of the stuff I'm nitpicking about holds it back because they've got so many villains. They don't know what to do with all of them. Had it simply been his father and the rhino battling back and forth, but they were so busy trying to set up a sequel that they put in the brother subplot, and you could have had the brother in there. You could have revealed him and done a whole sequel with him as the chameleon, spoiler alert, in the next film. We didn't need to have that tacked on to the end. Ugh. It kind of reminds me like in Morbius where they have the vulture, Michael Keaton just shows up and it's like, why? Why are you doing this? It's the same thing where it's like, we need to set up sequels. Stop getting obsessed with the sequel and make a good movie. And the thing that also annoyed the hell out of me, they killed the foreigner with a bolt to the eye. And then Russell Crowe, Nikolai, he gets, basically, they just got to wrap him up. They don't know what to do with him at the end of the film. He's just, he just goes and he's like, well, we've got to deal with it. We've got to deal with this guy and find out, you know, how he ends. And so it just ends up being this whole thing where he meets his dad in his campsite and a bear kills him.
I liked that. He didn't kill his dad. He let his dad get eaten by a bear.
But it's so anti everything. It just didn't do it for me. It was like you have this thing where his dad is this really evil that has been dominating his entire life. And the way you deal with this is a sitting around the campfire and then walking away and letting a bear kill him. It just didn't do it.
But there's a second layer to that. Yeah. He has been successful at what he does and built himself up because he's always had the deck stacked in his favor in, you know, opportunities of power or whatever. Well, we see as Craven walks away that he's removed the bullets out of his gun. So now you've leveled the playing field. If you want to say man should be the only animal that should be feared, you know, like hunting isn't a fucking sport, dude. The animals don't even know they're playing. Like, you know, but they don't fucking know. So I think it just kind of showed like you can think your way up here, but it's because of the power, it's because of the tools, it's because of the opportunity, it's because of the privilege, it's because of whatever. But when you level the playing field, sorry, but the bear fucking wins, dude, and is gonna win every time when you don't have, you know, these extraneous things at your disposal. I thought that was kind of poignant. It shows that he was never strong, that he was brutal, and he was, you know, kind of like what we always see, where I'm not going to pay the kidnappers because it would show weakness. I'd rather sacrifice my own son, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty common thing in like characters, you
right,
know, when
right.
you want to show that they're brutal and they're, you know, they don't give a shit. But I thought it showed the duality of man, Greg.
Well, you know, it's an interesting take. I think that if you liked it, then there's nothing wrong with you liking it. I felt to me more a little bit like it was tacked on and kind of an afterthought. And so for me at the time, I'm like, well, this wasn't not anything special other than, yeah, I'm taking the bullets out of the gun. And it was like a big, you know, F you to his pop. But I would have liked to have seen, and maybe if they had have gotten a sequel, to see a really good battle between the two of them. And as a matter of fact, let's just be 100% honest. I would have preferred for them to downsize the villain count, make the whole movie about his dad and Kraven coming to blows because his dad runs this criminal empire and Kraven is shutting it down. And then his dad hires somebody like the Rhino as the main henchman, kind of like a Bond film when you've got the main villain and you've got Jaws as the henchman. And then you set that up and you have this great dynamic, a final fight between the mini boss and Kraven, and then the final fight between dad. Don't do the whole brother thing. I mean, you can put some of the flashbacks in there, but don't reveal who he is. And the thing is, Chameleon in the comic books is Kraven's brother, so that they did keep that canon. So I don't have a problem with that. It's like I would have liked to have seen that, maybe just hint at it, but don't reveal it. So I think there's things that like I said, I think it's a fine movie overall as a comic book film. It's not offensive to me like the next piece of shit is that we're going to discuss here in a few minutes. So yeah, it's something that I didn't not enjoy. But there were problems that I had with it that I was like, yeah, I would have done this better. I would have done that better.
Those things that you point out, I agree. Keep this what I consider really good and entertaining film from being great. Whatever the threshold is for great. I mean, the first one that I remember seeing, Superman, the original Christopher Reeve Superman, were a little before my time. Yeah. But I think it was 1989's Batman, the one that had Jack Nicholson and Keaton. The soundtrack was done by Prince.
Yes.
Like that was the first time that I remember being at an age where like this was awesome. Also, I have a question. Just give me 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Is Batman a superhero? Because he doesn't have any powers, right? He just is rich and can invent shit.
That's a question that has been asked down through the ages. And I would say yes, definitely a comic book hero, a superhero, you know, technically he is because of the gadgets that he invents. He's the MacGyver of the comic book world where he can just take a paperclip and kill you with it. But so I think that he's special in that regard, but it's his intellect and his ability to his detective skills. I mean, when I was growing up reading, it's kind of like why the Robert Pattinson one I think did really well, and I kind of like it, is when I was growing up reading Batman, it was called Detective Comics. He was a Dark Knight detective that was in the shadows, and it was very heavily on solving crimes. And then as it went on, it gets a little bit more involved. But Batman's a unique character, is that he's trained himself to be that if he can take down a superhero, because there's a lot of super villains that don't have any powers, but they use gadgets. Like Lex Luthor, for one. He's a super genius. So he has in the new movie, he will have a suit that he wears like he does in the comics and in the cartoon, where he uses that suit to become powerful. So I think Batman, I would say, would definitely be in the superhero realm.
About that. Yeah. The other day, I didn't realize it was such a common.
It is. You know, it is one of those things. Yeah, nerds beat you to it. They do debate on that one quite a bit. I would say yes. I would say yes. He's a superhero.
Look, I don't know how history looks back on that 1989 Batman film.
Oh yeah, no.
But all I'm saying is, whatever the threshold is that makes a superhero movie great, as opposed to just okay or just entertaining but not great or whatever lies just below that level, those things that you're pointing out just keep it from being great, but they don't make it bad. Like this is not a bad movie. We're not being dragged down to the very depths of what movie and studio stupidity can manifest itself as. This is not that movie. This, you know, for the little picadillos that one can find, are just, to me, minor quabbles that keep a good movie from being great. They don't make a good movie bad. This movie's good. I liked this movie. I thought it was fucking rad.
I don't begrudge you liking the film. I think it is it's a fun film, and that's kind of what we want sometimes. So it did lose $75 million at the box office overall.
So I'm not getting my sequel because I
No, they actually, I think that this was the one that they finally, Sony said, okay, we're kind of done doing these spinoffs. We're just going to focus on Spider-Man. Marvel tried to get Spider-Man from their fingers again. And they went, no, we'll just let you guys keep making the movies and we'll just take a share. We'll take our cut. So as long as the movies are made and Marvel has to keep making them, they will. They'll find a way to keep those licenses, but it is, yeah, it would kind of ended those. But, maybe they do something with Kraven in the MCU. You never know. That was the intent. I think they introduced some of these villains because in the comic book there was a group of villains called the Sinister Six that were going to come together and take on Spider-Man. And I think they were kind of moving that. Like at the end of Morbius where you see Vulture and you get these ones coming together, maybe they would have gotten there eventually had they done it right. I think they were so focused on the end of the project that they didn't take enough care into the beginning, and that ultimately hurts it. But I think that, like you said, I think Kraven, there's nothing wrong with it. You're right. It if you wanted just a fun Saturday afternoon movie, you could do worse than Kraven. And I tell you what you can do worse with is our next film. This would ruin any
Christ, dude. I hate you.
This would ruin a decade of Saturdays if you put this film on. And I watched it for the second time, watched it when it came out. Thankfully, didn't go to the movies to see it because I was wary of it because of what I'd heard. And I said, I just didn't feel good about this going in. When I watched it this time, I literally was just getting mad that somebody had the balls to write this film. And oddly enough, it's written by the same asshole that I've mentioned before who wrote Dark Phoenix, Simon Kinberg. And when I was looking into this movie, Fantastic Four, with Miles Teller, Kate Mara, and Michael B. Jordan, Michael B. Jordan, of all people, couldn't save this fucking movie. And when I looked into it, found out that there was originally a much better screenplay that was written with a decent writer and the director kind of teaming up. And the studio, again, we're talking about the executives at Fox that saw the screenplay and went, nope, we got to get this out quick because the rights were coming due or they were going to lose the Fantastic Four because the last movie they did, Rise of the Silver Surfer, was 2007. So this had to be out by 2015 or else they were going to lose Fantastic Four forever back to Marvel. So they went, we can't do all that. Scrap all that. We're going with Simon Kinberg, who wrote probably one of the non-screenplays in the history of screenplays. This is a non-movie.
Dude, I am so fucking glad that you said that. In the way that watching Kraven the Hunter without the comic book knowledge to me maybe was a benefit, I started to feel like maybe I'm missing something here. Maybe this is really important as far as either things that had happened before or they're setting up things that have happened later. I kept second guessing myself going, well, this is so fucking terrible that I must be fundamentally missing what this is and why it's important. I have watched Code of Conduct training about conflicts of interest in like business affairs videos that were more entertaining than what I watched here, because at least Luis and Linda, who met with a supplier for dinner and the supplier handed them each $100 gift card, they needed to report that to HR. Now, whether it was going to rise to the level of conflict of interest, it didn't really get into all that, but I know from watching it that at the end of the module, I needed to click bear on the side of caution, tell your HR, you know, person about it. And that was just Luis and Linda at dinner, right?
Yeah.
And even that had more actual content and character development than what this was. I was relieved to hear you say that. I was relieved to read the critical reception that says dull and downbeat, woefully misguided, worse than worthless, aesthetically drab and dramatically inert. Yes.
All of that.
What is this, Greg? Explain yourself to me and explain why you nerds allowed this to happen.
Yeah, it's a mystifying thing that this is what the studio wanted. I go back to the studio saying, if we slap Fantastic Four on it with the history, Fantastic Four, if you go back, is back to like Marvel franchises, is basically one of the pinnacle ones at the beginning, at least with Spider-Man, the Hulk, and Iron Man, and all those, Captain America. It was a very popular book, and it still kind of is, but historically it was a great little super team that was based on family. So you had Johnny Storm and his sister Sue, and then his good friend Ben Grimm, who ends up becoming thing, and Reed Richards. They were all working in a science program. They end up becoming astronauts. They go into outer space, and because they go through a radiation field, they end up coming back with these powers, and because they have these abilities, they decide to use their powers as a team to defeat evildoers of the world, among them being probably, you know, they're one of their biggest nemesis in Doctor Doom, and that's kind of their arch nemesis. What this film does is none of that. It basically spends, like we were talking about, watching a film. This film is only an hour and 40 minutes, and I think with credits, it's like an hour and 35. And they spend at least a third or 40% of it on young Reed Richards and his relationship, and all they fucking do is teleport a freaking Matchbox car, for crying out loud. It's not entertaining.
Dude, and he here messes I am going, up his... well, there must be something about this Matchbox car. Like, everything. When you know nothing, then everything feels important because you just don't know what you're supposed to be looking at.
Yeah.
It's like, if everybody's baby is beautiful, then nobody's baby is beautiful, right? I mean, we have to have objective standards for these things. And so I'm just going... oh, well, gosh, I better really pay attention to this. I better really pay attention. Well, no, that wasn't important, and neither was that. Okay, well, I really better pay attention to this. Well, it turns out that wasn't important either. Like, man, I was fucking frustrated, dude.
Yeah, it sets up the plot. The way it's written is just, hey, we've got to establish that we can teleport this thing somewhere else. But they spend so much time on it. And then they come back when they go into the present. You've got the world's oldest high schoolers in Miles Teller and Jamie Bell in the science fair, and they're still doing the same shit they were doing as kids. They've had no advancement. They're still working on this. And then you've got one of the things that just kills me is the stupid adults where his dad is a freaking moron. If you have a kid that big of a genius, you're not going to be doing what these adults do. The way the teachers do it, oh, they're so misunderstood, misunderstood geniuses, but they never get into the science of what it actually is. In the comics, Reed Richards is a huge brain. He's much respected. In this, they play it like he's a dorky teen who can't wash his own ass, but he can send a Matchbox car into another dimension. And so, you know, they do the whole thing with the suits. This story is so much, the story of the Fantastic Four is so much better than what this piece of shit film gives them. And part of the reason I think they do this, again, Simon Kinberg is a studio hack who writes for the studios. He did it with X-Men Dark Phoenix. He's done it with other X-Men films. And he makes a good amount of money because studios love him. He can crank out a script in 2 days, and this is what you get. Unfortunately, they really fucked up with this one. And you got a guy like Josh Trank, who, you know, he was kind of up and coming at the time. I can't remember everything he did. I know he did the precursor film. Let me see. Look at Josh Trank's.
Who the fuck is Josh Trank? Oh, the director.
The director, Josh, yeah. Trank. So they hire him.
Felt like I was
on Chronicle. Yes. This. Chronicle was this film that he did where it was kind of almost like a found footage where these three high school friends get superpowers. And it was done really well. If you watch Chronicle, you will be mystified that this is the same director. But it's widely reported that when this film wrapped, he walked away and trashed it. He said, quote, a year ago, I had a fantastic version of this film and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's reality, though.
I mean, he literally said that the last 4 years of my life has not been healthy for me.
Yeah.
Like in my life, they fucked this guy.
Yeah.
Over.
So the thing is like he envisioned an epic type of superhero film that his original cut was going to be 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is about industry standard for a superhero film to get some character development and do what he wants to do with the characters. And the studio cut it to that 1 hour and 40 runtime because they needed to get this out quick. There's a scene where I pointed out to my wife when they, because it takes forever before they even get their powers to begin with. They spend so much time in this movie dicking around with Michael B. Jordan and I hate my dad and I'm so angsty and I'm so angry. They spend so much time with that, which is all cliched, that it's almost, the movie's almost over when they get their powers. And when they do, Miles Teller, who plays Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, he runs away. And then what we get is several scenes of the thing, the guy who's all rocks, fighting on a TV screen.
Yeah.
That's what we get.
I know.
It's so insane that they thought that would be entertaining and not actually show those battles. They look like really cool battles. He's fighting a tank, but you see it on a little video screen in the movie. It's like, what are you doing?
I was so fatigued by being on high alert for so long, hoping or thinking that something that was going to happen, that by the time anything happened, and I mean, I use happened in the loosest of quotes, by the time anything happened, like I could not have given less of a shit.
Yeah.
It's like I was walking a tightrope and I was so focused on not falling that by the time I got to the end, like I couldn't care about anything. I didn't give a shit. And now we talked about these guys before because I thought they were X-Men or whatever. They're not. The Rock Man and
the Rock Man, yes.
Icy Hot and Icy whoever. Hot.
The Human Torch, yes.
The Human Torch. Yep. And so, I mean, I guess I thought, well, you said this is a pretty beloved franchise, right?
Right.
And I thought I knew, I thought that. I mean, for someone like me who doesn't know anything about comic books to even know that they exist as a group is something. So they've got to be something. And I know it's not because of these movies, because I had never seen any of these before we had to do this.
Yeah.
Before you made me do this. And I spent part of the time, by the time we got to the part where now we're calling Vince or whoever it was, Dr. Doom.
Right.
Is that who it was? Vincent? Vinny? Vincent?
Yeah, Victor. Victor.
Victor, whatever,
and
whoever.
And they actually use his name as Victor Von Doom, and then he becomes Dr. Doom.
Well, I just kept thinking that there was a wrestler that I used to watch here in town called Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
But I looked it up, and that it isn't true.
Yeah.
I might be thinking, Google tells me
yeah.
that I might be thinking of a wrestling tag team called Doom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From NWA WCW 1989 to 1991. That was the Natural Butch Reed
yes.
and Ron Simmons, who defeated the Steiner brothers
yeah.
for the tag team championship.
Yep.
Anyway, Ron Simmons later made history as the first African-American heavyweight champion in professional wrestling history.
Yeah, yes. And he's the father of...
Junkyard Dog.
No. The Rock is his, he's his son, Dwayne Johnson.
No, not...
Yeah. No, not Ron Simmons. You said
Ron,
you said.
You're thinking Rocky Maivia.
No, Rocky whoever. Johnson. I thought you said you were saying Rocky Johnson. Yeah, you
no,
mean
this
Ron,
is
Simmons.
Ron Simmons.
Ron Simmons. Yes. No, that was Farouk in WWE. My bad. My brain heard Rocky Johnson. So my bad.
That's what your brain wants to hear all yes. the time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just
Rock. You're just going through life, yep. and you're just man. I just wish somebody would mention The Rock,
so I could so point out
tell them that I. Like people who have like one specific body of knowledge and they're just like waiting for someone like maybe today is the day that yep. I go in the supermarket and someone's talking about 14th century Polish literature and it's my chance to shine because I'm going to be like
aisle over. No. I'm in yeah. the aisle over and I come running around.
Wait. Did you ever consider the fact that maybe...
So here, the interesting thing about Doom, let's talk about Doom real quick, because I thought you might've been, let's go back to the wrestlers real quick. Hold on. So I was thinking you might've been talking about Dr. Death, Steve Williams, cause that was a Dr. Doom or Dr. Death. I really liked him back in the day, but I digress. Dr. Doom.
Dr. Death is what I, yeah. yeah.
Dr. Death, Steve okay. Williams. Yeah. He was really
cool. I got cool. them all conflated. Okay.
Yes. But right. Dr. Doom, you know, he is probably one of the top. Bad or one of the top villains in the Marvel universe, and I've got like some examples. This goes back to the Fantastic Four, what he looked like, and so he's got this, he's a powerful dictator of a small European country made up named Latveria. He basically wants world domination, a little bit patterned after Hitler in a way,
little
European Latvia. yes so a little type of thing Bavaria. There And what we get in Dr. Doom, in this movie, is a glorified fucking crash test dummy. This guy looked so shitty. I could not believe that they wanted to pass this off as Dr. Doom. This abomination is yeah. their Dr. Doom. That's how lazy this movie is. This is Dr. Doom.
He looks bad. He looks like fucking Darth Vader yeah. on the right with a green flowing nicely tapered exactly. cape. I mean, my God, his stylist.
Well,
on
you,
point.
Well, what's interesting is Dr. Doom was so wronged in this film and in previous films that the MCU is trying to regain their audience because it's kind of had a down year since Chris Evans left and Robert Downey Jr. left. And so now they're trying to build it back. So they have this big movie coming out this Christmas called Avengers Doomsday. And it's completely centered around Dr. Doom. So you got the Fantastic Four Doom on the left here. And in the middle, this is just at Comic-Con where Robert Downey Jr. modeled a basic Dr. Doom. And then if you look at the one on the right, this is what the Dr. Doom is going to look like for the film coming out at Christmas. Now, look at left and look at right and tell me which one would you rather see in a film as the supervillain? Crash will test you, dummy? Or
will you be honest with me?
Yes.
Did you get a boner when they introduced the one on the far right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When the, I think... It's a kind of a hard thing because Robert Downey Jr. is going to play him. Okay.
It's kind of hard.
It was kind of hard. But Robert Downey Jr.
age, dude, that's how it is.
Robert Downey Jr. is going to play him, and he also played Iron Man, so it's kind of conflicting because people are like, is he only doing this because they're throwing them a lot of money and they want him to come back. There is a alternate universe comic where Tony Stark, who Robert Downey Jr. played in Avengers and Iron Man, he became Dr. Doom, that he ended up going to through an alternate universe where he was Dr. Doom instead of Iron Man. So,
but this isn't canon or anything?
It kind of is. So we'll see. I think what they're trying to do, they brought back the Russo brothers who did the other Avengers movies, especially the Endgame and Infinity War, which is their most successful. So they brought those guys back, and I think that there's hope that this one that's coming out in Christmas is going to bring in a lot of the characters that have been introduced lately, but also bring back some of the characters that we loved from the originals and see some of those back on screen. They're also looking at merging, because now that MCU has gotten the rights to X-Men, they're bringing in the X-Men characters into this Avengers. So it's going to have a huge cast. We'll see how it goes. It could
be
good.
What's the difference between an X-Man and an Avenger?
Well, the Avengers were...
I'm just kidding. Please don't.
Well, let's get into that for 5 to 15 minutes. No, it's all
I thought Avengers Endgame was the shitty Avengers movie we just watched.
No. That was Dark Phoenix was the one we watched.
Order of the Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix. X-Men Dark Phoenix. Order of the Phoenix was Harry Potter.
Harry Potter and the Dark Phoenix.
That was Harry Potter, yes. We did not watch an Avengers movie.
We did not?
No. We watched...
Because they're all awesome?
They're not bad. You know, there's Age of Ultron is kind of debatable. The first Avengers movie is really good.
Ultron is a badass name, though.
Yeah, Ultron is I like that one, but I'm biased. I enjoy those movies, but...
Well, we're all biased in some ways.
Yeah, I suppose so. But speaking of this movie, going back to this, to wrap this bullshit up, is this movie was just done just the worst possible way. So I'm going to bring up some screen stills of the... They did one in the early 2000s.
Yeah, 2005.
Yeah, it was this one. And while it's not great... You have to remember this was just coming out of the 90s and they were trying to make everything into a superhero film. And so they licensed this out. At the time, you see Chris Evans in there. He played Johnny Storm before Michael B. Jordan did. And he was really good in it. And now he's Captain America. But
okay, did we have a big backlash to Michael Jordan being Johnny Storm, which was originally a white guy, the same way we did with like Ariel being Queen Latifah or whoever it was?
Yes.
We did have a problem with this, because I heard all about the Ariel thing. My God. Yeah. Heaven this forbid was... we take a Hans Christian Andersen character and cast someone not white. But I don't recall.
Well, we know most of the people who live there aren't white. Or Hunt Christian in Holland or whatever. Most of them are non-white, so why wouldn't they not cast it? No, I'm kidding. Did have a backlash to it.
Okay, well, I, you know, didn't hear about that one, but I just assume, because everything has to have a backlash the second, you know, anything.
It did. There was a lot of comic book purists that didn't like Michael B. Jordan being cast, but he had come off.
I mean, I don't like Michael B. Jordan being cast because it was shitty. It's not because he's black. It's because this movie fucking sucked and he fucking sucked in it. You could be Native American. You could be whatever. Like, I don't give a fuck. That was terrible. And you deserve to feel bad about it. And it's not because you're black. That's a part of it. Yeah. But it's not all of it.
Yeah, I would say that he's the least of this movie's problems. He does a fine job as Johnny Storm, and I think people who didn't like that he was cast because he doesn't look like the Johnny Storm from the comics probably would say the same thing. I think if you watch this, it's like, well, he's doing all right. It's just that the rest of the movie is a pile of crap. So they did that one, and they did one in the 90s. It was so funny that Roger Corman made. It was a really cheesy Fantastic Four. So here's another picture of the original movie. Not bad. At least they look like superheroes compared to the piece of shit we watched. And then they had this one from the 90s. 94, I believe, was when this was made. And yeah, it looks, it's dated. It doesn't look great. But I would probably watch this one, which never got released because it was made as like a tax write-off. And so they hired the studio, hired Roger Corman to make the film so they could keep the rights. And then they could write the movie off as a tax write-off. So it never got released.
You'll never convince me that this picture in the top left isn't from like a screenshot of like a porno parody of the Fantastic Four.
You know, it looks like that.
It looks exactly, you know, like it's.
It does look like that.
King of the Thrill, and it's just horny stepsisters and doing it like that's what this
three on one they're about to get down. Yeah, that's it's getting ready to happen in this scene. But yeah, so
you ready for hard dick? Oh my
god. The thing likes to say it's clobbering time, so he'd probably
time to clobber that pussy.
but yeah, so they ended up just recently, I think this was last year, we went and seen this, this is the new one for the Marvel Universe. It's a stark difference. There's a lot of people who aren't a huge fan of this film. I really enjoyed it. I thought this was more true to the comic, but it also, even if you didn't know the comic, this movie is so much more fun than what we got in this Josh Trank version. Are you okay? You're like right up in there.
Is there going to be a cute little robot in
there? Was it's already been released.
Oh
yeah.
I haven't seen like $1 billion worth of toys in the store with this cute little guy.
The movie did okay. It didn't do as big a numbers as they hoped. I think it's going to be okay. They're going to be in Avengers Doomsday. They'll be a big part of it. I think that right now this is more true to the comic than what we got in the Josh Trank version, you know, and the one that was released. So
these uniforms are very like minimalist Euro, like Scandinavian. I'm loving it.
It's a retro set. It's set like in the 60s. So it's kind of a precursor to all the superheroes, and they end up at the end, spoiler alert, they get sent to the, into the future where they'll end up, you know, hooking up with the modern superheroes.
I love it. It looks like they should be sitting in like Ames chairs and like mid-century modern furniture.
It's very retro. Like, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So, but I bring those images up from the early 2000 version, the 94, because what they do is when you compare and contrast to what we got with this Fantastic Four, it's a nothing burger of a film. Just absolutely nothing burger of a film. We get nothing resembling a plot. We don't find out their powers until the movie's nearly almost over. There's no them fighting any bad guys, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're sent to another dimension where there's nothing there. It's just barren wasteland, so they can have this 15 minute fight scene, if that. How long did that final fight scene last?
Well, I stopped caring about that. I honestly had hoped that they would lose and like the bad guy would win. Dr. Von Doom. I mean, I had a pretty disappointing dental procedure last week that felt more fulfilling than watching this movie. And I left the dentist crying. So if that tells you anything.
Well, I don't know where he touched you.
Well, it wasn't so much that.
If it was my dentist, you wouldn't have been crying.
Greg, careful, buddy. Fucking pervert. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm happy. I'm not happy. I'm not happy about any of it. I'm happy about Kraven. I'm not happy about Fantastic Four 2015 film. That's what it's called on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But I am relieved to find, I mean, I knew that it was going to be a bad movie because it's on our 8 worst movies. Although every rule has to have an exception that proves the rule, and that was what Kraven the Hunter was. I was relieved to find out that it wasn't just that I'm stupid. I am stupid, but it's not just that I'm stupid. It's not just that I don't have the foundational knowledge of this body of work. It's not just that maybe of all of the genres of film, this isn't really close to the top for me. It's not just, I was happy to find out it is not just me, because I was so fucking confused.
Yeah.
And like you said, the stages of grief that I went through, you know, there was denial. There's no way this movie is as bad as I thought it was. There was anger. There's bargaining. Maybe Greg's going to tell me something about this that is going to enlighten me. Maybe some people did like this. And maybe we found out that a boy who watched this movie, his cancer was cured or something. No. Always a silver lining.
No, not this one. There's a lot of bad parts to this movie. It is bad from start to finish. It's a nothing of a film. But probably one of the worst things they do is at the end, when the four heroes are standing then looking out at the world and trying to decide what their name is going to be. And the thing goes, "Oh, that's fantastic." And the dude goes, "Say that again." Well, that's, and then Fantastic Four comes up on the screen. I wanted to punch a baby when that came up, because it was like, are you shitting me? Are you really, do you really think that's this ending that everybody's just going to go, "Oh, that was so good."
They winked at the camera.
Oh my God. You gave us nothing to watch. And you basically sold us a bill of goods that we were going to get one of the top superhero teams in the world. People knew going in, this movie lost $100 million, and it still has, it's still one of the reputations of being one of the worst. I think when it won the Razzie for the worst reboot or sequel ever made for that year, an assistant production, crew member showed up to accept the award, which is kind of funny. And he got up in front of the entire audience at the Razzies and went, "I am truly sorry for this film and what we did to you people." And that's how everybody feels about it. Kate Mara, who plays Sue Storm, and good actress. It's not like it doesn't have good actors in it. Tim Blake Nelson is in it, and I love Tim Blake Nelson, but these people won't look at the film. Kate Mara said that once she had heard the reviews and the way the audience felt about it, she's never felt compelled to watch this film that she's in, and probably never will. So that is it with the first round, Fantastic Four versus Kraven the Hunter. I think there's no doubt in our minds who the loser is this week. I mean, are you going to throw a curveball and say, "I was kidding all along. I really loved Fantastic Four"?
Dude, there's no way that I could. There's no way I could fake the sincerity of how much I loved Kraven the Hunter. And there's no way I could fake how much I hated Fantastic Four.
Very good.
2015 film.
Then it is decided the loser for this week. Yeah, is this piece of shit. And I like Miles Teller. I liked Whiplash. I thought he was great in a TV miniseries called The Offer. I liked a lot of people in this film. Jamie Bell was in Billy Elliot. But this is a shit. This is a hard one to sit through. Thank God it's only an hour and 30 minutes. So if you have not seen this, do yourself a favor and see the new one. I would say, Eric, there's people that slag on the new one, but it's like we talked about Supergirl earlier. They slag on these things because, of certain reasons. I would say the new Fantastic Four, even though you would enjoy it, and then you would go, "Oh, this is what they meant to do. This is..."
I don't think I can bring myself to do that, Greg.
Oh, really?
You have ruined not only my life, but my desire to ever see anything Fantastic Four related.
I'm sorry for that, because you might have enjoyed it. Yeah, you might have enjoyed it.
Nothing.
Thanks for Nothing from like Caddyshack. Remember your favorite film?
Man, that movie sucked too.
Thanks for Nothing. I love Caddyshack, but that's for another day. Let's look at our final four now of the worst Marvel movies ever made. And this was brought up earlier because there's some of the newer ones like the Marvels and Thor, Love and Thunder that are kind of bad, but those are MCU movies and we just stuck with the Marvel films from like 2000 up until the MCU took over and the Sony ones. So this is where we're at right now. We're going to have X-Men Dark Phoenix, the eighth seed, against Elektra. Oh, that was, whew. And then Morbius, our good buddy. Oh, you want to talk Battle of the Turds. Morbius at number six is going to take on Fantastic Four. So
fuck,
that'll
man.
Be our next show in just a couple weeks where we will discuss. And we're going to have a special guest, I believe, still. Mike Lobolanovitz, Mike Florida, is going to join us in the studio to kind of help us decide which of these turds.
In the studio? Do you know what that means?
Yes.
What, is he coming to your house?
No, in this studio, this virtual.
Oh, this virtual, so this not in the studio.
No, this virtual.
It's the opposite of that, really.
Yes, this virtual studio, not coming to the house. So okay. from his studio to your studio to my studio to the world.
To the world.
To the world. So that's going to happen in.
Studio up your ass.
I hope not. Is the echo chamber.
Hello.
Anyway, thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. If you have any messages for us, want to send us an email, you can always do that at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. Always make sure to check out the podcast on the streaming providers, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. That's another one too. So make sure you go out there and subscribe and tell a friend. We'll be back in a couple weeks with Mike Lobolanovitz to discuss what is the worst Marvel movie ever made? So with that being said, and all the fun we've had for tonight, thanks you for joining us. I'm turning over to Eric for his parting words of the night.
Thank you as always for listening. And until next week, live your life like Kraven the Hunter, courageously and with conviction, doing something that you love. We'll see you next time, guys.
Thanks so much. 2 weeks for the final four of the worst Marvel movies ever. Goodbye, everybody.